It doesn't matter whether you're, like I said earlier, the biggest pop star in the world. Like, I don't think people are going to believe you if you're not at least a little bit authentic.
Welcome to the Cloud Machine Podcast, your all-access pass to the music industry. I'm your host, Matt Landry, and every week we immerse you in the music world, uncovering industry insights, offering expert guidance, and exploring the stories that influence the industry. The Cloud Machine Podcast is brought to you by Aites, the innovative creative agency behind some of your favorite live concerts and tours. Want to take your music to the next level? Join our vibrant community on the Aites Network Discord. And with that, let's get started with today's episode. Welcome back to the Cloud Machine Podcast, your backstage pass to the industry, brought to you by Aites Creative. My name is Matt Landry, and today I'm thrilled to sit down with a very special guest and friend, Alex DeMauro. For many years now, his band Valley has been making waves with their unique blend of pop, indie, and alt rock, and they've just dropped their third album, Water the Flowers, Pray for a Garden. Today, we're going to dive into the making of the album, life on tour, band roles, and a lot more. Whether you're a longtime fan of Alex and Valley or just discovering their music, you're in for a treat today. Hey, Alex, how are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks. How you doing?
I am fantastic. Thanks for joining today. I feel like we're long overdue because I've had your other band members on, and I'm stoked to have a chat today because of the album release. How have these few hectic weeks been for you?
I mean, they've definitely been just that. They've been hectic, but a lot of fun. I mean, we love doing this thing, you know, at every step, whether that's releasing music and, you know, doing like the nitty gritty stuff in the trenches like that. Yeah. I mean, we're not, you know, we have a wonderful team that helps us through this, the whole process. But I mean, like, we love it at every step of the way. Right. Whether that's in an initial like writing stage process, or that's you know, the production of it, or making that translate live, kind of, yeah. I guess at the late step of it all. So
yes, well, and doing the driving radio tours and doing the late night write ups or whatever, and doing all that stuff.
But yeah, that stuff's all fun too.
Yeah, fantastic. I wanted to start the podcast by asking you your favorite live show experience ever as a fan.
Wow. I mean, I feel like most people would have a couple that come to mind. One of them definitely would be, I mean, okay, this is kind of a flex, but it's my one gold coin for this one, but I won this contest. I don't know if I told you about this, but yes, you know that I love Green Day.
I've heard about this. Yes. But please.
I feel like I tell everybody I know, because I feel like I have a free pass to do so. But, I won this contest a few years ago. I won this contest.
I just love this story.
I won this contest. Like, okay, well, it was 2016, so it was more than a few years back, but I won this contest, and I mean, it really just started with the fact that Green Day canceled a show in Toronto for whatever reason. It was like this like hockey, it was like a World Junior hockey thing that they were playing, and I bought tickets for all my friends because they were super stoked. They're like, your favorite band's coming. We all have to go. And the tickets were like $20. So I was like, I'm going to buy everybody a ticket. I don't care if you pay me back or not, you're coming.
Right.
And then they canceled and I was bummed, but they were sick. So I get it, I guess. But, right. They had this like advertising online for a contest. I guess it was for, it was a chimpanzee sanctuary that Billy Joe from Green Day was working with as his charity, and so they had this contest online. You donate $10, whatever, you get, you know, put in to win this thing, and I'm the idiot that won it. So yeah. It's like, you never know, like, is there somebody on the other side actually winning these things? And
right
truth is, there is.
And what was the prize?
The prize was, no matter where you are, I guess, in North America, the world, whatever, you get flown out to LA to see the show. meet the band, free hotels, et cetera, et cetera. It was an experience like no other. And it was my first time in LA too. Right. So, you know, going out there for the first time, first of many, but it would become many. You know, I was all starry eyed and bushy tailed and walking around, you know, seeing like the stars on the sidewalk and seeing the whole thing and seeing Green Day at one of the most iconic venues and probably one of my favorite venues in LA that I hope to play. It was the Hollywood Palladium. It's a really cool venue.
Yeah.
It's like a ballroom. Love it. So I won, they flew us out. And we got there and first of all, I met like Billy's entire family too, which was the funny thing.
Right.
I met his mom. I met his sister. I met his kids. And I met his wife. So I met like the whole family. Everybody was there. It was a special occasion, I guess, because they were kicking off their tour at the time. And so, you know, me being like the biggest Green Day fan, I'm like, all right, you got to keep it cool. You're meeting your idol. You're not just meeting your idol. You're meeting their entire family.
Right.
It's like if you met a girl that you liked, you had a crush on, and she was like, that's great. Come meet my entire family as well at the same time. And we'll all just have a chat. Anyway, I'm digressing, but it was a crazy experience. Billy Joe tackled me during the sound check of Minority. I like lost him on stage at one point. And cause they run around during like certain parts of the set. Like, trust me, we have learned from every artist that we've watched in like their live show. Right, and right. Green Day is no exception. Like I feel like we pull from the energy of what other artists are doing live. Right. And cause everybody has their own unique way of doing things and engaging the crowd and making, you know, a 60,000 cap venue feel like a 600 cap venue, you know?
Yeah.
And they do a fantastic job of that.
You were saying he tackled you during sound check. I don't understand. Yeah. So like were you there during sound check?
We were at the barricade and it was just, us and a couple other people kind of down the way. And I think, I can't remember if this was, I think this was after I had met, Jenna Fisher from The Office as well. She was there. I know it sounds like a dream that you wake up from and you're like, whoa, all these weird people were there in the same room. That'll never happen.
That's crazy.
She was there with her kids and we were like a few of the only people in the room and her kids had these like earmuffs on and they were dancing around the open, you know, ballroom floor or whatever.
Yeah.
And you know, my friend and I were looking across the venue and we're like, is that Jenna Fisher from The Office? What?
Crazy.
And her kids just like came over and started like dancing with us. And we were like, holy shit, this is wild. And yeah, so a wild experience turned more wild, but I think it was after that Billy Joe, during the sound check for Minority, cause he runs around a bunch during that one. He like came down to the floor and he tackled me and I was like, this isn't real life. This is crazy. Anyway, that is a very long drawn out version of that story, but it's a crazy one. So best concert experience, I would say, for sure.
And for you, what makes live experiences memorable? Just generally as a fan, as you know, an artist on stage.
I think pure enjoyment of the show.
Yeah.
Whether if it's like a moment that you have during a show or something that, there's always something that sticks with you. I remember I saw, we were playing Life is Beautiful Festival in Vegas a couple years back. And, I'd never seen Cage the Elephant before. And everybody's going to hate me for this because of where we are right now and Brad Summer and everything. But I skipped seeing Charlie XCX to see Cage the Elephant. I don't know why. I just had a feeling that I wanted to be at Cage the Elephant. I wasn't the biggest fan. Like, I mean, I have nothing against them. I just didn't really, I knew a few songs, like a few of their hits. But I heard that they were really good live. And so I went and I saw them, and turns out they're one of the best live bands I've ever seen. Amazing. And the entire band has such a mojo. They have this, like, they're just so good live. It doesn't matter who you are, where you're from, you have to see that show. It's about the music. It's about everything. The way the lead singer just is in this moment with the crowd, that you're not thinking that you're at a show. You're just in awe, in pure amazement of what you're experiencing.
Yeah.
And it was an incredible show. And I think there's an indescribable, like, a lot of people will say the sound is good, I love the songs, this and that, they were a really good live band. And yes, but I think it's an intersection of all those things meeting at the same time, that people aren't really, like, thinking about. It's not a conscious thing, but you just go, like, that was a crazy show. Like, that was amazing. Yeah, yeah. You know?
And as an artist, do you feel like there's a way to channel that or to, like, work on that? How do you make experiences, like, memorable, as we're talking about right now?
Yeah, I think there's a combination of trying to be different, but also trying not to do too much. Trying not to take people out of the fact that they paid money or did something to come see your show, and they just want to see you, and they want to see your most authentic self. You know, if they wanted to go see, you know, if they wanted to go see their favorite band, you know, do their version of that, they would go somewhere else. They want to see what you have to offer. And I think, it is a struggle sometimes to be authentic, you know, and that in itself is such a, it's not a light task, but it's definitely a rewarding one when you figure out what that means for you on stage. Being comfortable, just living in the moment. Like, you know, if we're playing a show and a fan has, like, a Maybe jacket, for reference, it's one of our records, and there's a jean jacket involved, and a lot of fans bring Maybe jackets to shows. And if there's a Maybe jacket that gets thrown on stage and I put it on for a song and then I struggle to take it off, and it's like this, which has happened more than once.
Okay.
but I'll struggle to take it off, and, like, Kara will help me, and she'll be, like, pulling at one end. and we're like, you know, it's maybe awkward for a second, but it's funny. And, like, people are like, that's goofy. You know, they're just being themselves and having a laugh on stage. And
I think from what I'm hearing from you is like to not, for artists to not necessarily be scared about authenticity and, like, creating those moments, but at the same time as well, like, not being, like, too scripted, you know, like,
absolutely,
like, being, like, a human in the moment, and that will make it memorable for yourself as an artist, but also for the people that are attending the concert.
Yeah, and, like, if something spontaneous happens during a show, you got to roll with it.
Yeah.
You know, and just that audience will get to experience that.
Fantastic. We do a quote segment on the podcast. Last year it was a quote where we talked about the music business and the industry in relation to music as an art form. But this year we wanted to go a different way. It's a Joni Mitchell quote from 2004. So this is 20 years ago.
Okay.
She says, "I heard someone from the music business saying that they are no longer looking for talent. They want people with a certain look and a willingness to cooperate." I'll repeat it again. "I heard someone from the music business saying that they are no longer looking for talent. They want people with a certain look and a willingness to cooperate." Now, you know, just analyzing quickly, Joni Mitchell is not saying this, but that she's saying that she heard someone from the music business saying this.
Okay. Yeah.
What are your first instincts when you hear this, this quote?
I think I can understand where that might have come from. And I think potentially that person in the music business might be a little jaded as well.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is so fair because the music business can beat you down a little bit. But
yeah.
I think one would hope that we're past the point of I think just being like not being open to new types of art and the way art is expressed. And every artist's situation is completely different, right? And whether you're the biggest pop star in the world, you know, whether you're like Taylor Swift or whether you're an indie band, you know, from Ohio trying to make it, you know, in the States or whatever. Everybody's situation is different and everybody's climb is different. And I think, it's an interesting quote, especially coming from somebody in the music industry as well, you know, right. But I can see why somebody would analyze it, like that. I mean, I've heard things spoken like that before also from people in the music industry who are frustrated, because it can be a grind. But I think the most important thing is to not compare yourself or your career to other people's, which is, you know, not an easy thing either. And it's something that we all struggle with. But I think you have to be happy when, you know, blindly happy when people achieve success, because they're now, you know, sharing their version of art, you know? And I think it's maybe a little naive to say that, you know, that's all that people are looking for. They're not looking for talent. They're just looking for somebody to say yes and jump on stage and sing and dance like a you know, a trained monkey or whatever, you know. It takes a lot of talent to go and you know, be on stage and be that perfect version of whatever that is. If it's like not cookie cutter pop, but like if it's a version of like crafted, you know, perfect pop, like people are not stupid. And if there's no authenticity in there, then people aren't going to believe it. So I guess my summary to this is, it doesn't matter whether you're, like I said earlier, the biggest pop star in the world. Like, I don't think people are going to believe you if you're not at least a little bit authentic.
Yeah.
So it's not that I renounce the quote. I don't completely agree with it, but I don't fully disagree, I guess, in where I can see the perspective of where that might come from.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic. Where do you see the industry going? And are you seeing any new developments from, let's say, from your hat, from your chair, from your, you know, artist point of view? Are you seeing some new sort of developments that other people may not necessarily be seeing?
Well, I mean, I know I've spoken a lot about authenticity, but I definitely think that is a very constant theme right now.
Yes.
I think that people just want to see you for who you are. And I know that, I think that social media has had a very large effect on this, whether it's TikTok or Instagram or any of the other platforms out there. I think those platforms have just kind of sped up the process of, all right, we've seen all this stuff, like just show us what you're doing, you know?
Yeah.
And I guess maybe to attach to one of my previous answers, I think people are bored of seeing the same thing. And I think There's a large trend of kind of not a, I get not really a trend, but maybe more of like a revisiting of organic content, organic, yeah. Whether that's in the music or on the visual side. I think people are craving a lot of that. And I think, I know that's something that we had planned to kind of lean into on our side of things. Regardless, you know, we did a record that we didn't overthink it. We didn't try to compare it to anything. And I think that's kind of what I'm seeing as well. People are kind of putting out whatever they want now. And I don't know if that's necessarily attached to a specific genre. They're kind of just like, you know, Kesha is putting out this like really, really raw pop sound that she's like, this feels like the most authentic version of what I'm doing right now. And I think that's sick, you know?
Yeah.
And it does feel, at least for me, authentic. So I think for a sec we thought maybe, oh, this could be tied to like a genre leaning thing. But I think it's just across the entire music industry. People are just doing what they want to do.
Yes.
What they've been doing for a long time. And people are like, oh, okay, that I get it. Now, you know, and you look at our lovely friends in the Beaches, they've just been doing what they've been doing for a long time, and people just noticed. And they, well, not that they hadn't noticed before, but I think
it's at a different level, right? It's just true.
Yeah, no, they've grown so much, and the internet and the world has noticed, and they're like, the Beaches are the most authentic version of themselves now, and that they've ever been, and they've just continued to do their thing.
Yeah.
You know, and I think they're, you know, more deserving than anybody what they're doing right now. So
I completely completely agree. I think, you know, to me, it's we're seeing a big shift in the industry. That it's just like you're saying, it's empowering, like artists are being empowered to like speak their truth, you know, or their and not necessarily create for others, but create for themselves. And we're seeing a lot less power to, let's say, like the labels, or at least a lot less creative power to the labels.
Absolutely.
So
100% agree.
I wanted to chat about the album.
Sure. Yeah.
First of all, congrats. It is, you know, I've listened to the album so many times over the past week. I really love it.
Thank you.
Can you tell us what inspired this album? And I know that it's the name of the first track on the album, but what does the title also signify for the band?
I think the title has a bunch of different meanings kind of wrapped into it. It's an unconscious thing and a conscious thing as well. It's tending to the important things in your life, you know, watering your flowers, making sure that you're taking care of the things that are most important to you. Whether that's your personal growth or just growth within your life or friends, family.
Right.
So I think it means a bunch of different things to a bunch of different people. But to us, it's definitely a version of growth for sure.
Yeah.
And a self realization and a maturity that I don't know if we thought that we needed, but we did. Yeah, it's a bunch of different things, but it's a realization and a good one, you know.
Yeah. No, I think it's great, and you know, it's both like actionary and reactionary. Now that I think about it as well, it's like, okay, I'll water this garden, whatever the garden is, I'll water it, and then I'll pray for something, for something new, you know, for growth.
Exactly.
Just reflecting
on it. And you tend to
it. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. You tend to it. It's not something that you do and and you leave, you have to keep tending to the, to this garden and keep, you know, keep, paying attention to the things that are important to you in your, in your, in your life, yeah. including self-care, you know, all that wrapped up in it.
Yeah. And it's also for me anyway, it's also, you know, you pray for a garden, but you're not, you don't necessarily know what's going to happen, but it's not about what's going to happen. It's about how you're treating the garden itself. Right. It's anyway, sorry yeah. not to get too,
no, no, it, I, but, no, yeah. I'm with you. I love it.
Can we talk about the songwriting, the production process, and how it has differed from your previous work? Also, especially now that it's, you know, the third album, yeah, I want to hear you on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very different process, obviously. We've done things one way. I mean, not one way. We've done things differently over the last few record cycles, for sure. Whether that's writing and recording in different locations, working with different people. But there's obviously one notable thing that's different about this record specifically. We're obviously now in a three piece and, you know, sending, you know, a ton of love out to Mickey, you know? But we're three now, you know? And so that changed things. We had to figure out what that looked like for us in terms of writing. We had to figure out what that looked like in terms of production. And how we were going to move forward with everything, you know, and people had to step into different roles, myself included. We needed to find what that new version of us was going to look like, and not necessarily in like a, from like a genre standpoint or anything like that, but more so just like how we were going to do it. We knew that we were going to do it. We just didn't know how we were going to do it.
Right. It was inevitable. It was inevitable. You had to put something out.
Yeah. I mean, and we didn't have to do it so soon, I don't think, but
that's true.
I think the timing just felt right. We could have definitely taken space and from our previous era work, whatever, and decided like, hey, like we are just going to recollect and do it. But yeah, the timing just felt right for us. And so we did decide to obviously move forward and reach out to, you know, a friend, in Chase Lawrence, who, is in a wonderful band called Coin, if you don't know it.
Yes.
And if you don't, you should, but,
yeah. Shout out Coin, check him out.
And yeah, but he really came in clutch and, not just in his endless talent and guidance and his unwavering ability to just lift people up, but he really did instill confidence in us again, in ourselves to be able to continue doing the thing.
Yeah.
So that was step one. We had to get past that point to then be able to move on to the rest, you know?
Yes.
And we ended up, collectively coming to the decision that we would write the whole record together. And which is also very different. We've never done that before. We've never written with one collaborator. Just, you know, the three plus four of us. You know, not to say that there weren't other people involved. There were definitely a handful of other people involved on this record, but in terms of a main fourth collaborator, we had never done that before to this level. He was very integral to the whole process and the vision, and we were really all on the same page. So when it came to songwriting or production, there was a level of trust that we all had with each other that was unwavering, and you know, if somebody had an idea, there was no ego, there was nothing like that. It was just let's try anything, and it was fantastic, and So yeah, that was kind of like, in terms of the creative and organizational standpoint, it kind of all came together very well in that regard.
What is it about A Cabin in the Woods that really changes things around for you? Because, you know, some of my favorite albums have been created in like sort of, you know, I don't want to say... I don't want to say desolate places.
No, but, it's okay. But, it can be desolate.
But like, as in like, you know, very, you know, divided from the rest of the world, I'd say.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
and specifically I think about like the Bon Iver's first album, like, yeah. You know, like that vibe, you know, what is it about A Cabin in the Woods? And also about creating the majority of a project in such a short amount of time. Both of those sort of aspects, you know, as being like characters as well to this process, what is it about those two things that like really changed, you know, the sound of Valley for this era, at least?
Well, I think they go hand in hand, the you know, the desolation and the time aspect of it as well. I mean,
yeah,
we got there and there was no internet, there was no cell service. You had to walk like, you know, 500 meters to even get like a bar of 3G or whatever it was.
Sure,
to send a message to the family being like, I'm okay. I didn't die. and so it was, I think there's a process when you get there where there's the realizations of like, okay, we're doing this thing, you know. You need to unplug. You need to drop everything that you had going into it, and just really dive in, because it is daunting. You know, like going out there with, you know, your collaborators or whoever you're going out there with to said cabin, not just ours, but whatever. Whatever place or location that is separated from the world that you're going to,
yeah.
I think there is like a tiny bit of a transition that your brain needs to make, because you're not with the people that you're normally with all the time.
Yes,
I mean I'm with my band all the time, but
you're right. But your partner, your family, et cetera,
exactly. Yeah, and you can't just go and see them. On the weekend, or you can't go and see them, you know, during the week, or and visit whoever, wherever, whenever you want. You're now dialed in to this thing, you know. And so I think all of us went through a different process of that mentality. And once you're over it, honestly, because it is definitely like I'm not a homebody by any means, but I really enjoy spending time with the people that I care about. And not doing that for a month is a lot sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, it's the whole, mindset first of getting there and changing the way that you think about, how you're creating. 'Cause time doesn't really play a role. In terms of like when you're in it, because we would work from 10 a.m. until 3 in the morning some days.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's not like, oh, I got to wake up to go to see somebody or do something. Like, nope, you're the next day you're waking up and you're going to do the same thing.
Yes.
Or a different version of that. And it's kind of nice to know that when you're in it, just so you can, your attention is all there. Your attention, your creativity, nothing is leaking out. It really is like a pressure cooker for all of your thoughts and your feelings. And it does make you go a little crazy at certain points.
Yeah.
Like I was, I think when we got there and there was no service or internet, I went a little crazy.
Right.
I was on the roof, like adjusting this dish to make sure that we would get something. I was on the phone with like Viasat or whatever company, something like, I don't know. And then I realized I was being dumb, and I was like, Kara was like, just live in the moment, just live in the moment. We'll figure that stuff out. Just live in the moment. And Kara's honestly amazing at doing that. She is the member of the band that will, kind of help you realize that, like, just like enjoy this right here. We're all trapped here together. Let's watch a movie and chill out or do whatever. But so anyway, my long-winded answer, the cabin thing gets crazy. But I guess my last point is, in terms of the entire duration, it's a timestamp, it's a time capsule. Doing it in such a short period of time, in my opinion, does keep things cohesive, and it's easier to jump back and forth between songs within your project and hear familiarity between different things. And I think that is one thing that keeps it special for us and for the people that are listening. And we've tried to do it before. But I do think this record specifically has achieved a new level of that for us. And I'm really proud of that.
Fantastic. The album covers a wide range of, emotions and themes. While it's still quite grounded in the moment, the present, the authenticity of the band, the organicness of the process, are there a few like key messages that, you know, y'all sort of had in mind while still writing the album? Like, I just want to see like if there is like an overarching message to it all, really.
I think there's definitely a few of them, both on the personal side of things. on our side. I mean, we don't explicitly say, we don't tell you every single thing that we've been through necessarily in the last year or whatever. I mean, this record has themes of love, of growth, definitely of heartbreak, and grief. And so it's a bunch of different emotions that can be interpreted. I guess it's up to the listener, you know, but it was our version of, I don't know how many stages there are of grief, but it was our version of going through that together. Being, frustrated and angry at certain points, or coming to self realizations. And so I think, that can definitely be pulled without, explicitly explaining exactly what certain things are about. Those themes can easily be pulled from the record, and being, frustrated with somebody, but still saying, I love you, and certain things like that. I don't know, but overwhelming love and I guess maybe also the ability to let go and be at peace with certain things. Yeah. I think it's
fantastic.
It's,
no, it's a great answer.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I just wanted to have a fun question. Do you have a favorite track on the record? And why does it stand out for you?
So I've had this question asked a few times, and I feel like I might answer it differently every time.
That's great. Every day has a favorite track.
But I really love Crawl Space.
Yes, yeah.
I love Crawl Space, man. It's a really fun song. Crawl Space isn't like asking for anything. It just is fun,
Right.
And it pulls from, I've heard people say it pulls from like a Vampire Weekend-y vibe. Or other definite forms of inspiration that we didn't necessarily specifically pull from other artists or genres. We kind of just did it, and it became a fun little Baroque-y thing, at the end. I don't know if we would have gotten that aspect without maybe Chase being involved, because he is a piano wizard. And
right.
I love the fun parts of that song, that it just is, it's playful. And it's just fun to play live too. You know, we did this little, backyard session-y thing, for the record release last week, which yes. you were there for.
Yeah.
And we weren't going to play that song acoustic, but somebody asked for it, because we only played like five songs, and so somebody was like, play one more, and we didn't really have one rehearsed acoustically.
Right.
But we just said like, all right, let's try it.
And why not?
It actually went pretty well. Better than I thought.
I thought it was great, and like you know, even like for me, the song, even recorded but also live, it really hit me. Like when Rob sings that first, like just that first line, it's just you're in it like right away. And it's so great.
You are. And I think that also made me realize that just a good song, no matter how you dress it up.
Yes.
It's just a good song. And so it's just fun to play. I love the lyrics. I love the melodies. One of the faves for sure.
Fantastic. As we record this, the album's been out for a week now. How has the reception been from your fans, the industry, your friends and family? Have any reactions sort of surprised you?
It's funny. I didn't think about that until this very moment, but it's been a week. Yeah.
It's been a week. Yeah.
I think I'm definitely happy with how it's been received. I think I've had people talk to me about this stuff that I didn't think would come to me, and you know, whether it's family members or friends, and the people that you like least expect, and they go like, "Oh, I love Mosquito" or whatever, and you're like, "Oh my god, you actually listened to it? You didn't just like toss the singles on, you know?" Which I think is an accomplishment in and of itself, that somebody is willing to go and press play on the album and go and listen to, you know, every song. It's not a long record, you know, it's I think 38 minutes, 12 tracks, but it's a lot of fun, and it goes really quickly top to bottom.
Yes.
I think it goes because it's just fun to listen to.
Yeah.
From my perspective.
Yeah.
but no, I'm pleasantly surprised with the comments and the reception and the song choices, people coming to me with their favorite tunes that I didn't expect, especially right. from certain people. It's great. I love it. I'm so happy to hear what people are taking from it.
Yes. Yeah. Fantastic. I wanted to go into the touring and live performance side of things, 'cause y'all are about to go on this, you know, big tour, mm-hmm. like 2 month tour here. You've been on some amazing tours the past few years, and how does it feel to bring Water the Flowers, Pray for a Garden to life on stage? I've had the opportunity now to see it a few times, and I think it's beautiful, and y'all do it so well. How does it feel to bring it on stage, and are there any major differences for you?
I think it does feel, first of all, rewarding. We were thinking of what these songs would sound like live when we were working on them.
Yeah.
There are certain songs specifically where, you know, Rob will be like, "Oh my God." And I just can't wait to like throw my arms up and say like, "Everybody sing this one line, because it means so much to me. And I hope it means, you know, so much to somebody else." So
right.
In terms of like the songwriting aspect, it's just really rewarding to start hearing these songs live and start hearing you know, fans sing along to the record. And I think one thing that stands out this time around is we were able to properly do this cycle and put a record out and then go tour, where previously yes. we had not done that. With Lost in Translation, we intentionally delayed the tour and the record, and it just became a bit of a mess, and it got lost in translation in a certain okay. way. Not to like pull a dad moment, That's like, we're cutting that part.
No. We're not cutting it.
No, because we those things didn't line up. The record ended up coming out 20 days, I think, after we finished the North American tour.
Right.
And so, which it seemed unfair to not only us, but our fans and the people that listen to our music. Because I think there's something so important about making your art and you know, getting it all perfect the way you want it to be, and then like on that like specific little canvas, and then throwing it out at all these people, and then being like, all right, what do you think we're gonna go and show you what this looks like live, whether it's messy or whatever it is.
Right.
You get to be a part of this now with us, and it's a proper era of this project and show and everything.
Yeah.
And so it was a little disappointing not to be able to do that fully last time around we did it. So we went to Asia as well, and that was post record release, and that was amazing. And it was, and people would say, you know, Big Jet Plane is my favorite song or whatever, like right, album right. track that they'd been able to listen to on the entire record.
Right. And they're able to reference, right. And that's like a whole thing. The fans are like singing to the songs more. They're more connected to music because after they go to the concert or even beforehand, they can listen to the music that they're about to go and check out and be like, oh, okay, this is different live. Okay. Like they're able to like, you know, do those things.
Yeah, exactly. Or there's like an anticipation or a nervousness, whether or not you're going to hear your new favorite song off of this entire record live.
Right. Yes.
You know, and this time around, we're actually going to play the whole record, the whole new record live.
There you go.
Every single song. But yeah, like, you know, there's an excitement to being able to do that both on our side and I think on the fan side. And I think I'm just really happy that we have the opportunity to go and share, this era and this record, and all of its bits and pieces, you know, good or bad, happy or sad, live. And
fantastic.
So, yeah.
Touring stories. Do you have any memorable or funny touring stories from previous travels that you can share with us? I also know that not everything can be shared or there's stuff like that, but any fun like touring stories?
Yeah. Two or three for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to think back to one that's not too crazy, but I mean, last headline tour was fun. We had Aiden Bissett and his wonderful band and crew touring with us, and they were fantastic and they were so much fun. And I honestly think a lot of the time when you tour with somebody, you everybody's really busy and doing their thing on the road,
right?
So you don't always have the opportunity to link up and you know, hang out and there is a camaraderie that eventually develops between multiple teams that are touring together. And not that we didn't have that going through the entire tour, but I think we really felt like when we got to the end of the tour, we were like, I feel like we just started like being best friends, you know?
So
they're, yeah, like I said, their team was amazing. And we pulled a little tour prank on them. And we brought out this not a ping pong table. We brought out a table to play, beer pong on during, Aiden's set before us at this little venue in Ohio. And we put it like right beside him on stage and started like playing like beer pong as a joke with like drinks and everything, like the whole thing.
That's funny. As our
tour prank. And then the funniest thing, he actually threw the ping pong ball and like got it in and like played along, and he was so chill with it. And then that night we ended up playing a bunch of drinking games and having that like last night of tour.
Yes.
Celebration, and we had like a tailgate, like little bus party behind the venue, and they wanted to get rid of us, but We did not want. I think we just didn't want the night to end and the tour to end. We had so much fun with them, and yeah. and it was pretty crazy that night.
Fantastic. I want to ask you about like as you know a bassist member of the band as well. How do you balance different responsibilities? And because I know that as as a band member. A lot of people have like different responsibilities, whether it's like this band member has like this and this to do on the road. And then this other person has another whole whack of stuff to do, or at least they're responsible for. How do you balance your different responsibilities? Even in the studio, as you mentioned earlier, but in the studio and on the road.
I think knowing when to step up and also knowing when to relinquish responsibility are two very important things. Like knowing when to not, step on toes, or just trusting that somebody can do something for you. Cause we've done almost everything ourselves over the last, however many years of us being a band. So It's learning how to let go of certain things. In the studio, without having our fourth member there, we all kind of stepped up a little bit, and I engineered a lot of the new record. I jumped in certain areas where I normally wouldn't have before, or less frequent maybe. Yeah. In the studio. So that was a lot of fun this time around. That's another thing that made it different is everybody kind of just jumped in and filled that kind of gap that was left a little bit. And it felt really good because I think everybody was doing it together and pulling a little more from themselves. And it was so fun just, because you do have that camaraderie of like, oh, you're going to help on this thing and I'll help on that thing and we'll pull that weight there. So that's always nice, obviously. I guess that's more the studio side of things, but for live, I kind of became like the de facto, tech person of the band. Yes. Early on. Yeah. As you know.
I know, yeah.
And that plays a role in many different ways. Sure. One of which being like, handling all the live production stuff that from the band side of things that we need to get right or communicate to the people that we're working with. Yeah. So that thing that I mentioned of relinquishing a little bit of responsibility and trusting the people that you're working with. And I'm so thankful to have amazing, amazing people that we work with. Yes. And be able to communicate with them what we want. And I guess I'm kind of the person that communicates what the rest of the band wants and translates that to the technical side of things where people are working with us and helping us. Yeah. Make sure that the show is done right from a technical and logistical standpoint. Whether that's the types of mics that we're using live or, or if we're recording a set and that has to then get sent to somebody and comped and mix or whatever. And
yes. Yeah.
It's really every aspect of it. And I'm kind of lucky now that I can oversee it and somebody else can kind of take care of that for us because we are busier now than we've ever been. Yeah. And I have the ability to trust somebody that they'll do it better than I could, right. and know that. And that's so nice to have, honestly. But I think just the most valuable thing is being able to let go of that a little bit and know that it's going to get done right. Yeah.
Fantastic. What's next for Valley after this upcoming tour? Without necessarily, I don't want to be that guy that, ask for like what's next or any secrets or anything, but are there any upcoming plans that you're excited about? Is there anything sort of even in, even on the personal end, not even Valley, you know, what are you excited about right now?
Oh, I mean, I'll say my excitement on the band side first. We are going to be touring in a place that we've never toured before in January, February.
Yes.
And I think I'm allowed to talk about it because I think it's being announced on Tuesday or Wednesday of next week.
Okay.
Which I'm not sure when this is airing.
This is out on Tuesday.
There you go.
Yeah.
Out on Tuesday. We're hitting Europe and the UK for the first time. And it's something that we've always wanted to do. And
yeah.
I've been to Europe a handful of times, but I've never been to the UK. We have so many fantastic friends from out there, and so excited to finally see it and experience it and go and play to the fans that definitely they deserve it. They deserve to have us come.
Yeah.
We've had a lot of people, you know, just saying like, just please come.
Yeah.
In whatever capacity you can, come and play music here. And we're excited to finally go and do that.
It's so awesome. The UK and Europe, especially I know y'all have been touring North America for so long. Mm-hmm. It's the drives in North America compared to the EU, all that stuff.
Completely different, right?
Yeah. It just gets so much easier. Yeah. Cause
you were kind of just there too.
So I have not been on the road with the Beaches there. But I've done Europe so many times, even on the French side of things.
Okay, nice.
And it's just so much easier in regards to like logistics and like drives and just so much, easier on the body as well.
Interesting. Okay.
Because like your max drives are like 6 hours and that's like a lot.
That's a country. You're in the next country.
Oh my gosh. that's many, many countries, you know. I'm excited for you guys and you know, y'all deserve it. And the fans, like you're saying, they deserve it as well.
Thank you. No, I agree. I think it's going to be fun to go out and you know, be somewhere we've never been, and we're so blessed to have been able to go and do you know, some incredible countries in Asia. And that was a whole other world, you know, and this is going to be, another whole other world. And it's a lot, and it's amazing. And we're incredibly excited. You know, we're going to go and play Poland. Like Rob's got a bunch of family there, and I think they might sell out the venue just them. So
we'll see. A lot of family. And oh my gosh, even like, I'm just excited to see the visuals of this album with the UK sort of background and stuff and like all of that. Like, I'm so excited for you guys on that front and just to experience that. So I just want to ask a last question here. Do you have any advice for the young musicians and maybe the young bands that are looking to break into the industry, especially, you know, I wanted to come back to what we were saying earlier, especially in the beginning when you need to, you know, take on multiple roles, wear a bunch of different hats. Do you have any advice for those bands starting out?
Yeah. I mean, I think there is so much, there's so much noise out there. So one, I mean, obviously take in everything that's happening, but
yeah,
it's, I feel like sometimes it is best not to pay attention too much to, what everybody else is doing. At the same time, because if you're looking around too much, you're not looking forward at what your initial goals are, I guess. And
yes, yeah.
And the thing that you're trying to do, you know, and it's so easy to get distracted. It's a practice. It's something that we still struggle with sometimes. But we're lucky to be in a band where we can all kind of remind each other, like, hey, just keep moving, keep looking forward and keep moving forward. I think not diluting the best version of yourself, I guess, not pulling too much from the noise and the surroundings, but not necessarily just looking from within, but pulling from your most authentic self, yeah. I guess. And so I guess on that side of things, but, I think in terms of juggling the multiple hats that, that an artist has to have these days, I mean, don't be afraid to lean on the people that you care about, and don't be afraid to let go of, you know, certain responsibilities or ask for help. The music industry is so collaborative, and we're so, so lucky to have the ability to, first of all, lean on each other in the band, but also lean on, all the wonderful friends that we've made and the collaborators that we have. You know, it's when you're sometimes it's easy to kind of get knocked down and beaten down a little bit by the music industry, but when you realize that everybody is kind of going through the same thing, it's a bit more comforting, and we'll often, you know, have to call a friend and be like, oh my God, this thing happened. Actually, Rob and I ended up honestly doing that yesterday. We had a tough, like, music industry day, actually, you know?
Okay.
And so we found a friend who was also in a similar position. And he had some incredible words of advice. And I think it's just important to be able to have it be an open dialogue and reach out and go like, oh my God, this TikTok thing is killing me. Like, and everybody's like, oh yeah, me too, man. It's a wonderful thing at the same time, you know, being able to have more control over your career than you've ever been able to have. That is the gift that you're given now.
Right.
But on the flip side of it, you have all the control. So you have to, it's a lot of time, and you have a lot of roles. You've got, you know, your social media and your self promotion, and in addition to the art itself. So, I think being able to, like I said, have it be an open dialogue and lean on your friends, and, you know, just realizing that you're not alone.
A fantastic answer. I wanted to conclude the pod just generally with a quick game that we do.
Love it.
For those who've been listening for a while, we play a few games on the podcast. This week, wanted to do the Dream Fest game with Alex, which is basically giving you a chance to be basically the director of a festival. Basically asking you if you were, you know, if you were to program a dream festival of yours, who would be slotted, or what would be slotted in these categories? And this is dead or alive. I don't know if that helps.
Oh, that's cool. Okay.
Yeah. So I'd ask you for three acts. So like headliner, middle act, and opener. Where would it be? As in what would the venue be? Time of year? The decade, as in, is it now? Is it in the future? Is it, you know, in the 70s, 80s, whatever? And for you, if there is one food or beverage that you'd serve that would best represent you, what would it be at this festival?
Okay, it's it's funny because the stupidest thing came to mind, the food or beverage thing that I'll get to in a second. And anybody who knows me that's listening will be like, he's such a dummy. But okay, well, first of all, I think we said earlier, I've never been to the UK. I am so excited to. And so seeing a festival there would be unbelievable, you know, I hope we get to play one at some point, maybe next year, we'll see. But seeing like a Reading or a Leeds and making, let's see if I can like make a lineup for like one of those. But I mean, I'm honestly very lucky that a lot of the artists that came to mind are still alive right now.
Yes, yeah, sure.
and so I'll go with, Green Day is the headliner.
Okay, fantastic. Okay.
So Dead or Alive, I guess Alive, I mean, they're my ride or die, right? So Green Day. Yeah. And then the 1975 is one of our favorite bands, like collectively. Yeah. You know, they're just, I feel like we've grown up in our adult life listening to a lot of their fantastic music and just the way that they've been able to reinvent themselves and just musically really move the industry in a certain direction, like,
yeah,
massively. So many, I feel like there's so many more bands out there because of them, you know, in our modern day.
Yes, yeah, I completely agree.
You know, I think if you have that, you know, accreditation, is that a word, accreditation? if you can carry the fact that you're the reason that a lot of bands were formed in that time period, I feel like that's kind of cool, you know?
Yeah.
So the 1975 is, I guess, the opener for Green Day, or the middle act.
Yep.
I don't want to say the wrong thing, because what if it's like a the opener for the 1975 and Green Day, like who do you put there?
Or who would just be an artist that you've seen live that you love to put in that third slot, or some, maybe somebody that you haven't seen that you would want to see?
I mean, you know what? I'm just going to throw Cage the Elephant out there, because like what a show that would be.
There you go.
I mean, they might be, I don't know how much smaller or bigger they are than the other two acts,
yeah,
but
yeah, yeah.
What a bill that would be, and what an entertaining one that would be. Yeah. So
fantastic. And then you were saying Reading or Leeds rather, like sort of like a stormy, cloudy UK vibe festival.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, hopefully you don't get rained out
yeah.
No, but, I think that'd be really cool. I mean, I've never been, I'd like to go. So I feel like my, like if it's my dream, I'm like, what a cool new place to experience this, yeah, incredible lineup, you know?
Fantastic. And then now the food or beverage question here.
What right.
Would,
right.
What would that be?
I feel like my friends will laugh at me and be like, you're such a little spokesperson, but I love Liquid IV to my core. I don't know why. See, and you're like, this wow. Motherfucker. I may or may not be drinking one right now.
There you go. Stay hydrated, folks.
Stay hydrated, stay on brand. But at festivals, though, honestly, kind of a necessary. We're serving liquidity.
Everybody's just staying hydrated. It's like those people on Queen Street that like give out like random like free samples of stuff. That's just like,
yeah,
everybody
that'll be
has
me.
That.
I'll be doing that at the festival.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Oh man. Well, that's a great, great answer. Great dream fest game. And that's how we, wrap up this week's episode. Thanks, Alex.
I love you. Thank you so much, Matt.
Love you, man. Talk soon.
Talk to you soon.
That was our chat this week with Alex DeMauro from the band Valley. It was so great to have a chat with him today. All about, where the band's at now, the album, his role, his responsibilities, how this sort of album and this creative process has changed the band, and a little bit about what's next as well. A little bit of chatting about their live show and some excitement for what's to come next. As he said, the shows in the UK and in Europe are out and available sort of now. So go check that out when you can. Also, just come check out, or rather go check out Water the Flowers and Pray for a Garden, which came out, you know, now a week and a half ago. An incredible album. I've been blasting it at home and in my car, and what a collection of songs. I love it so much. So go check them out, as well as continue to, I hope you continue to like this podcast. If you do, please like, comment, subscribe, do whatever you need to do to stay updated on the current music industry. We talked with Alex about, you know, sort of staying in the know to relieve some anxieties as well. And our goal with this podcast is to, yes, share some information and, you know, share some experiences from professionals in the industry, but also it's to relieve some anxiety that individuals have in or around the music industry. So if you, you know, love this episode, please like, comment, subscribe, do whatever you got to do, share with your friends to stay in the know. Thank you so much for joining us today. And until next time, keep creating, stay inspired, and stay safe. Thanks, everybody. Talk soon. Let's chat next week. Bye.